This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Shuad Kutin. With me, Kusu Chuang and Joyce Gobe, the top business stories of the day. Let's kick off with news from the digital world and news that the Internal Revenue Board has unfrozen the cryptocurrency exchange Luna. And this story is from the Malaysian Reserve.
That's right. So this is good news for all crypto investors and speculators out there, because the Inland Revenue actually suspended bank accounts of Luno, the UK-based crypto exchange platform, on January 13th, leaving a lot of players in the lurch, because you could have bought Ethereums and Bitcoins, but then following the suspension, you couldn't dispose of them. Thereby, your money was frozen in those accounts. And I think the initial issue with behind the suspension was the fact that the regulators felt that there were some tax discrepancies, and obviously there was also the small matter of the 75 million ringgit odd value of monthly trading volume that was not subject to tax. So obviously regulators and governments, being what they are, they don't like the fact that money of this volume is going through these coffers untaxed.
But how do they tax that? I mean, it's implementation again, right? Because at the end of the day, it's the whole digital economy. How a government's going to look into taxing this digital economy, it's very difficult to do that. I think everyone's trying to figure that out when it comes to governments,
yeah,
right?
That's a kind of global conversation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think in terms of the people who were invested in or used this platform to invest in, when the sudden freezing of the accounts happened, they were essentially in limbo, right? I mean, it would have been very difficult for them to dispose of their coins. Is it fair to them?
Well, yeah. I mean, but then again, for regulators, from that point of view, it's like they need to know who are these people. I think that they want to know who are these people who are trading it. They need data on them. And as Chuang mentioned, also taxes, right? And coming back to this, when the story broke, that it was frozen, the accounts were frozen. I think there was a lot of speculation as well, whether it's a Bank Negara, what's happening. I remember we were chasing that story, and yeah, it turns out it's actually in the Revenue Board.
Well, correct. And you know, the thing is, one of the reasons, primary reasons why people have flocked to cryptocurrencies is because there's a lot of disdain for fiat currencies and how the central banking phenomenon has really taken over the global financial system. I mean, to date, no banker has gone to jail for causing the financial crisis of 10 years ago. And it is precisely this disdain that has driven, especially the young...
Do you think it's
ideological?
Disdain or because they want that jump? You know, also that jump
of course,
the value of cryptocurrencies that jump like
absolutely.
Multiple
no question. So the
times.
Reason why cryptos have really taken on this momentum is multifold and manifold. And the fact that, you know, the overbearing nature of central banks and governments clamping down on platforms has not really helped the cause. But, you know, pleasingly in Malaysia, the two top money guys in the country, namely the central bank governor, Bank Negara governor, Tan Sri Muhammad Ibrahim, and finance minister too, Dato' Joe Ghani, they've both made public statements which show that Malaysia is not overly interested in shackling cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. And we have, as it says, I think this latest development where Luno's bank accounts have been unfrozen, it indicates potentially that something could be happening soon in the Malaysia crypto environment. It could be an official platform, for example. It could be some guidelines, for example.
Yes.
But it's interesting. And we follow Japan's direction in terms of embracing cryptos rather than prohibiting it.
Yeah, but I can see where regulators are coming from when it comes to wanting to put a bit of regulation or just you know, you need to have data.
Correct.
You need to know who are trading these cryptocurrencies, who are the people behind it. You know, at the end of the day, there's this whole concern about anti-money laundering as well and terrorism financing. I mean, they need to know. They need data.
You know what's interesting in this interview that Melissa just did with John D'Agostino, Managing Director of DMS Governance, and you know, this is from the 20th, this is just from a couple of days ago, is that he says he's for more regulation because in terms of that industry or that segment, there's just not enough. It's not gotten to a point where, you know, there's over-regulation. So there's no danger of that yet. He does see it as, in fact, enabling the industry of, you know, or the dynamics within the cryptocurrency segment. So it's interesting where this conversation about regulation is going, because often there are all these free marketeers who are ideologically committed to think, no, we shouldn't have more regulation.
Yeah, they're cramping our style.
Yeah, because the whole issue about cryptos is the fact that it's the new frontier and you're free of the, you know, big brother essentially, right? But then in the crypto world, you're fraught with danger. For example, I mean, if you have your coins converted into, you know, Bitcoins or Ethereums from your local ringgit currency, it doesn't mean that you're going to exchange at spot rates. You will be charged huge, impecunious amounts for the exchange because you're not getting spot rates. It's not official. It's basically willing buyer, willing seller. And the platforms themselves are monetizing this exchange in great quantities. The other thing, of course, is the fact that...
So this is an argument against cryptos?
Against platforms, because right now they're unregulated, right? Mm-hmm. And for example, say Bitcoin could be $11,000 right now per coin.
Yeah, one day,
right?
And then you wake up.
But you might transact at $11,500, $12,000 because the platform takes that rate from you.
Right.
And not many people know this. The other thing also, if you house your coins on a third-party platform, it doesn't belong with you. It's not in your pocket, you know. And these platforms are privy to theft.
So this is why regulation is important to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, you see, so there's you know, both sides have countervailing arguments and they both have water, you know, to back their arguments. It's just, I think eventually there'll be some middle ground, some elegant middle ground.
Okay, from the, you know, the ephemeral Bitcoins and that, we move to something much more kind of grounded. We take a look at the plantation sector. In the news, Hapsing Plantations Holdings acquiring a 55% stake in its rival, a smaller group, Kertam Holdings, for 1.18 billion ringgit to boost its plantation land bank.
Yeah, this is quite a sweet deal for both buyer and seller. And this is, of course, the Hapsing Plantations 53% subsidiary of Hapsing Consolidated, okay? So obviously, as you mentioned, Hapsing Plantations are buying majority, 55% in Kertam, paying about 1.15 billion total, I think, about 92 cents a share, which is good for Kertam's owners because this is the highest level the share price have seen since 1997, okay? And what is good for Hapsing Plantations, it boosts both their planted as well as total land bank by as much as 50-55%. And this land on East Malaysia is contiguous to their existing land bank. And not on top of that, it is also one of those plantations which is in the sweet spot for yields because the tree profile of Kertam is about 11 to 18 years old, which is right where you want it to be.
It's the most productive.
Most productive, yeah.
Yeah, Kertam's estates in Sandakan, Lahad Datu and Tawal are strategically located and close to Hapsing Group's existing estates, right? So there's greater economies of scale, and the exercise is also expected, as you mentioned, Chuang, to improve the age profile of Hapsing's oil palm estates.
And the other kicker for Hapsing Plantations, and you know, just one of those deals that very, you know, both sides would be willing to do. It is also the fact that Kertam is much more vertically integrated than Hapsing Plantations. Hapsing Plantations are very much an upstream producer. They do a lot of planting, but they don't have a lot of downstream refining capacities, okay, which Kertam does.
Okay, so we know that this group, Hapsing, has done very well. Do we know anything about the people behind it, Chuang?
Yeah. So, you know, The Star recently ran a story, which everybody loves to read, right? Top 40 richest Malaysians. Tan Sri Lau Chow Koon, the chairman of Hapsing Consolidated.
Made it to the list.
He's got 16 billion ringgit worth of personal wealth, which is not bad. But he's
not
ridden
bad.
Not bad. Much
okay,
better than
Kusi
a kick
Trump.
In the teeth.
Yeah. Okay.
He's ridden the coattails. I mean, if you had bought some shares of Hapsing Corn in 2006, you would have ridden a 20x increase in market value over the last 12 years. You'd have also seen a 10x increase in enterprise value. You'd also seen a 6x increase in net profit. So, yeah. So why are
millennials flocking to palm oil and companies like that? I mean, why isn't these numbers are so
maybe,
exciting,
maybe
right? From a return perspective, why not?
Good question. Why?
Maybe they don't understand the business, do you think?
Okay, number one, the complexity of share markets and equity markets, and you know, the players, they don't really help the case very much by throwing out these jargons and lingos. The other thing is also, of course, the fraud and the graft and the kind of like manipulation that goes on in share markets, right?
Well, that doesn't happen outside. Are you saying that there's none outside share market? There are.
And what about cryptos? I mean, it's like completely unrelated to earnings. Yeah. It's unrelated to anything.
Yeah.
It's like,
absolutely.
Exactly.
It's a fantasy.
But
this is
their world. This is the digital world, right? Where you can buy and sell stuff just like that at the drop of a hat. And this is their lingo, right?
Yeah. So Bitcoin's the all about animal spirits. It's all about the excitement people might have.
It's the in thing now, right? Is that
and then also? And then it could be deflated. The next day it could fall by half. No relation to fundamentals. I mean, can you even talk about fundamentals when you talk about
correct?
Things
but
like
you know,
Bitcoin?
If you had bought Hub Seng Corn in 2006, you would have risen a 10x increase in market value over 12 years. If you had bought Bitcoin at $5,000. And you had ridden it to 19,000, which it was at the end of January, you would have ridden a 300% increase in 3 weeks. So go figure, right?
Okay, but then of course it also fell. So if you bought it on, you know,
yeah,
on the way to 19,
timing of when you enter it.
If you had bought to 19 and it's 11 now, then you're crying, it's your soup.
Okay. Let's move to DNO, Green Technologies, a manufacturer of LED products. It's looking to achieve a double-digit revenue growth in the next 5 years, fueled by the growth of electric cars. Here's Managing Director Tan Kyong Cheong, speaking to BFM about the industry's growth prospects.
We look at today's car headlamp, the main headlamps. LED composition is only roughly about 3% today. And our major customers is giving us a forecast that it should reach 50% by 2021. You can see the upside opportunity. Although the car industry itself is only having about 1% to 2% growth rate, but because of technology conversions, this is where the major growth rate will come in.
That was Tae Kyong Cheong, Group Managing Director of DNO Green Technologies Berhad.
Yeah, so Tae sees global growth fueled by the fact that many car manufacturers are building electric cars. And in terms of specific markets, growth in China will be fueled by the country's desire to reduce pollution. So he also expects to supply Proton once they come up with the design for their first all-new car, as they already supply LED for exterior lighting to Geely and Volvo.
Interestingly as well, a quick look at the shareholder role of DNO reveals that a certain Dato' Mohamed Azlan Hashim is a 10.7% owner of DNO, as well as the chairman. And it's interesting because Mohamed Azlan, or Dato' Azlan, was the former chairman of Bursa Malaysia, as well as the former chairman of Proton. I guess, it's interesting because obviously you do need some big player, biz dev people behind the scenes, and you don't get any bigger than Dato' Azlan. Right?
Okay. So, yeah. They had an EGM yesterday, and do we not have any details on the highlights from that EGM?
Well, a couple of things, actually. Firstly, DNO shareholders approved its proposed acquisition of a 27.95% stake in its subsidiary Dominant Opto Technologies in Darren Berhad for 285.21 million ringgit to be satisfied via issuance of shares. And and also looking at earnings for the full year, 31st December 2017, its net profit almost doubled to 22 million ringgit.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. And when we get back, we'll have the opening numbers on the stock market. We'll also have Ringgit and Cents after the 9:30 news. So stay for that. We're looking at bankruptcy. Is it the end of the world if you are bankrupted? And we're going to give you more details in a discussion that we have as our guest this morning, Nirmala Subramaniam. She's Financial Education Manager at Agency Counseling and Dan Pengurusan Credit, or AKPK. That's coming up after the 9:30 bulletin. Ringgit and Cents this morning. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.